Yesterday we started the Fourier transform, and I would like to very briefly finish it today, and then we will go to Green's functions. So I gave you these two formulas, and so it's like basically, well, you have one integral and you have another integral, and the statement is these are indeed the inverse transformations for some nice functions. You might have verified that I mentioned this yesterday, so just an example of Fourier transform here. And so basically the exponential survives, the Gaussian exponential survives the Fourier transform. So the Fourier picture is the same as the original function. Okay, so now, of course, there is a problem here with the definition for which functions these things make sense. And so obviously you would say, well, these make sense for integrable functions. So if you have Lebesgue L1 functions, then this is just one. E to I something is just one. So if the function is Lebesgue integrable, then the integral makes sense. Problem is that if you calculate what is the image of Lebesgue integrable function, then you find it's not necessarily a Lebesgue integrable function. So the Fourier transform on L1 functions is not very nice. But you can show that if the image of the Fourier transform is, again, Lebesgue integrable, then these two things are inverse. So that's why mathematicians spend a lot of time trying to extend the definition of Fourier transform into some nicer spaces. And so the very nice definition is in L2, because L2 is an I space, it's complete, and so on. So, but for our purposes, and so there's a whole theory behind that. And basically this prescription here does not make sense for L2 functions, because the integral may not exist. So then you need to find a way how to extend the definition for L2. And basically we are doing by limits and so on. So it's very complicated theory. So for our purposes, we always assume that this is L1 plus L2. But even that is not enough. So you need to assume something more. But let's assume something like that. So now let me just mention a few basic properties. Or I will just collect them. So basic properties. And that could be a theorem or whatever. And I mean, I always mean that the functions are nice and so on. So I will not mention that, but So first property. So the Fourier transform is continuous. So this, if you have f from L1, then you can show that. Second property, limit k goes to infinity of fk is 0. So this is Riemann-Lebesgue lemma. And in some sense, it is something like uncertainty principle. So if you have, well, is the duality which I mentioned yesterday between the P representation and X representation, but basically it's something like that. Property 3. So again, the convolution behaves nicely with respect to the Fourier transform. So by this now I mean really the full definition. So you integrate over the whole space, fx minus y and gy. And then you do that. And this is just a product. Fourth property, so it's the shift again. So we have fax, which is now defined to be fx plus a. We had minus before, but now it's plus. Then fa at a point k equals to exponential Then again, you have the scaling property. So basically, everything is almost the same as we had before. So this is some real number, LA. And then you do that. Okay, it can be a complex number. A to T and F at a point K over A.
Excuse me.
Yes.
I want to, shouldn't be the definition of F A K shouldn't be minus exponential.
This one here. If I have plus, I have minus. Could be right. A minus K A. Yeah, probably. If I have plus here, okay, let me put minus here. Thank you. Property number six. So I'll introduce this a little bit later, but it's some kind of derivative. And so again, you pull out just the just multiplying by k alpha fk. I'll just explain what I mean by this derivative and what I mean by that. So alpha will be a multi-index, and the same property as we had before. Again, ex alpha f of k equals to d alpha of f of k. And there's also factor minus 1 to alpha. Okay, that's property number
six. You have
yes.
X on the left hand side.
Sorry?
Fx. No.
So this is a Fourier transform of x and fx, and it's evaluated at the point k. And finally, you have, 7. Parseval. So now, if you have a scalar product in L2, it's the same as the scalar product of its Fourier images in L2. But there's this funny factor 1 over 2 pi d, and I hope this is correct. So what I mean by that is really an integral fx gx equals the integral of f Fourier transform times G Fourier transform dk and 2 pi d. And the last property, fns, 8. F and f minus 1 are inverse. And again, I assume many, many properties on these functions f and g and so on. Okay. And I owe you an explanation. So here, alpha is so-called multi-index. Multi-index. So it's a vector. Alpha equals to alpha 1 to alpha d, where each alpha I is either 0 or positive whole number. And then what I mean by x to alpha, so x is a vector in Rd. Alpha is a vector in Rd. So what I mean by that is x1 to alpha 1. X2, and there's a product here, x2 alpha 2, xd alpha d. And similarly, the derivative is you count how many alphas you have there, f, and then you differentiate x1 alpha 1, d x2. Alpha 2 times and x, d, So you can prove these properties. I don't attempt to derive them here. Questions? Yes?
You need to define an absolute value of
alpha. Well, basically what I mean is, well, you take alpha 1 plus alpha 2 plus alpha, and so on. So I need to differentiate, I don't know, 2 times here, 3 times here, 1 times here, so I have to differentiate that many times. Yeah, so this is alpha 1 plus alpha 2. Yeah. Other questions? So this is the Fourier transform. So now let me do an example where we shall use it. And we are getting back to Dan's tutorial. So we are back to the diffusion equation. So problem is solve so-called Cauchy problem. Cauchy problem. For the diffusion equation. And so what I mean by that is, so you have an equation for u, d over dt, minus Laplacian on u equals to f, where u acts on t goes from 0 to big T, and x is just, it belongs to r to power d times rd. So this will be x. So you have t and x, and then this is in general dimension. And then you have f time equal to 0. You just prescribe that this equals to something. So this is your problem. And we are solving that in the whole space. So if you have some boundaries and something like that, it will be more complicated. But let us start with the free space. OK, so first step when you're trying to solve that, the simplest step is to do the Fourier transform this equation. And you will do the Fourier transform in x. So just forget about t and do the Fourier transform in x. So then I have, of course, I can exchange the integration and the Fourier transform with this derivative with respect to t. So I'll have t over dt of u transformed plus. So now I have the derivative, so it's that. So I'll be using the property 6, and it just brings me k. And I have two derivatives, so k square and I square. So this comes to k square times u of that, and this is the Fourier transform of f. So now this is a linear equation for u hat, so I can solve it. So it's linear. I can solve it by integration factor. So I will just multiply it to k square times t. And I can write down the solution for u hat. So u hat at time t and at k equals to e to minus k square t u k plus integral 0 to t f tau k e minus k square t minus tau d tau. So this is just the first. We are just solving the linear equation. So good. So we know what is u hat, but unfortunately we have to return back to the x space. So this is already a solution in k space, but we need to return back.
So now we know
this thing here. That's why I mentioned that.
So we know this beautiful property.
So we know how to Fourier transform e to minus x squared. This is almost what we have here. We have e to minus k squared t instead of minus k squared over 2. But we also have this scaling property number 5. OK, so here we have used property number 6. So now we will use the property number 5. So you know how to scale. So let me take A to be 1 over square root of 2t. So then, if you use 5, and you use this formula here, you find out that e minus k squared t equals 2. And so now you have 1 over a to power t. So it's 1 over 2t to d half. And then you have f of k over a. So it's e to minus x squared over 4t. This is Fourier transform. And then we still have this factor 1 over 2 pi d half, which was there before. So this guy is this guy. This is 1 over a to d. And this is just k over a. OK. So now, just let me define tx to be 1 over 4 pi t to d half. E minus x squared over 4t. So I hope you recognize your favorite function from Dan's tutorial. So this is a very, very nice function. It's called heat kernel. And you already know that if you go from this t to 0, then you should get something like a delta function. OK, so we shall see how it reflects in here. So we know this. So we can now write utk equals 2. And so we found, what is this guy here? We know that it's just the transform of that guy. So it's transform of g. And so you have a product of one Fourier transform and the other Fourier transform. So now we'll be using the property, the convolution property, which is property, I don't know, probably 3. No? Which is the convolution property? Property number 3. So I'm now using 3. So this is U0 convolution with G. And this is in KT. Like that. So it's this term. Plus 0 to t. And you see that this guy is exactly the same guy, but now it's g in t minus tau. So it's, again, so this can be written as the Fourier transform. This is already the Fourier transform. Again, it's a convolution. So it's f tau convolution with g at t minus tau. And there is a Fourier transform of that. And it's at k and d tau. Okay, so now we are almost done. So you see that everything is beneath the head. So we again look beneath the head. And so we can read what is U, which is that and that. So from here, you see that U at T and X is just U0, G, at T and X, and integral from 0, T, F, and G at T. Okay. F tau, convolution G, T minus tau, at X, and dt, d tau. So that's very nice. That's the solution. So if you want to, so this is the solution. If you want to, you can write everything explicitly. So you can plug in the G. So let me do it for you. So a bit more. UTX is, so now I'm just plugging what the convolution is. So it's integral over RT. E to minus, now we have G at X minus Y, and let's take U 0 at Y. So it's E to minus X minus Y squared for T divided by 4 pi T D over 2 U 0 at Y dy. The first term, and the second term is integral from 0 to t, integral of the space, e minus x minus y square. Now this is in t minus tau, so it's 4 t minus tau divided by 4 pi t minus tau d half. F tau y dy d tau. So this is, if you expand it explicitly. Okay. So now let me just mention, so let's forget about right hand side. Let's take f equal to 0 for the moment. And let's take the limit t goes to 0. So on the left-hand side, what we recover is u0x, so it's u0. On the right-hand side, you know that the limit of this guy goes to delta x minus y. So I can do the integral, and I get u0. But indeed, it works. So that's what you learned in this tutorial. Good. Questions? The last thing I want to do about the Fourier transform is, because you liked the notation yesterday very much, this quantum mechanics notation, I will use it today twice more. So this is the first place where to use it.
Maybe as a question.
Yes?
When you take t goes to 0,
yeah,
wouldn't you have problems from the second integral?
For the second term?
Yeah.
So I was clever and put it equal to 0. okay.
And if you take the limit, t goes to 0. Then.
Yes.
The integral.
But then the integral goes here, probably to 0. So you have no problem, right? Unless, or you have to be more careful.
Unless this is something that's
have to be more careful.
That's very big one.
I would say it goes to 0, but I don't know. Anybody knows the answer? So the last thing, which is very, very useful, is how to represent the delta function in terms of the Fourier integral. So again, I assume that f is nice. So then I just deleted these formulas, but you can write fx to be. So I do the inverse. Well, I do the Fourier transform, and then I do the inverse. So this is the inverse. Dk e to I k times x. So this is the inverse. And then I do the transform of fy dy. So if f is nice and f and f minus 1 is really, it's really inverse transformation, then this must be true. So I can, well, can first do the integral over y. So I'll have integral over rd dy fy. And what I'm left is 1 over 2 pi power d integral rd e to k times x minus y dk. OK. If you stand at this, you see on the left-hand side you have fx. And here you have integral over fy. So the only possibility is that this guy, delta x minus y. So you have a beautiful formula that delta x minus y can be written as this integral here. So in the Dirac notation, this is really trivial. So if you have position x and y, this is delta x minus y. Delta x minus y. But I can write it in p representation. So I can sum over p and x p p y. But I showed you yesterday, this is exponential I to x times p. So this is e to p times x. This is the complex conjugate. This is y. So it's e to minus e p times y. And I told you, if you have continuous p, then this becomes an integral 1 over 2 pi. And in d dimensions, it's 1 over 2 pi d. This is 1 over 2 pi d integral e to p times x minus y dp. You see how powerful this is. And you'll see it even more 15 minutes later. Questions? So let me now go to Green's functions. And so this is basically a very powerful tool how to find special solutions for differential equations. It is the right-hand side. So I'll just start with a very simple application, which is to boundary value problems. So Green's functions. First, consider boundary value problem. So what I mean by that, you have an operator acting on some function y of x, which is written, for example, so that we have Sturm-Liouville thing. So beta y prime plus gamma y, and this is equal to some right-hand side. But the coefficients alpha, beta, and gamma, they can depend on x, and f, of course, depends on x. And then you consider x to be from the interval a and b. And what is crucial in this construction that you have homogeneous boundary conditions. So you have y of a equals to y of b equal to 0. So this is boundary value problem. And so now let me assume that I have what? I have some special function of two variables x and xi such that L acting on G, so L is the operator which basically, well, prime is d over dx, so L always acts on the x part. So L, so there's Lx, and this has two x and x size, but x on x, equals to delta x minus xi. And at g at x equal to a and xi and g at b and xi equals to 0. So this thing is called Green function. Green's function. Maybe I'll return back. Okay. So let's assume that you have such a function. You found it, or somebody gave you, you paid some money for it. So what can you do with it? So then the statement is that the solution of your boundary value problem is just an integral from a to b of g, x, and xi, the right-hand side, dxi, is a solution. So proof. So first of all, you have to check that it satisfies the differential equation. So L on y, I go through. So this Lx on x, so I can go through the integral. So it's L on g, f and dxi. But L on G is delta x minus xi, f xi, dxi, so it's fx. That's what I want. So it satisfies the differential equation. And it should satisfy the boundary conditions as well. But so y at a. So again, I can do the limit. I exchange the limit and integration. So I will have g a xi. So this is integral g a xi f and dxi. But this is by definition 0, or by what we had. So this is indeed 0. And so is y of b. So indeed, if you paid money for your g, you invested your money well, because you are getting your solution. So question is, of course, if you don't want to pay money, but you want to get money for constructing these functions, how to do that? Okay.
how to construct
miracles.
G, if you can make me wealthy. And I'll just give you a recipe.
And the recipe is based on very simple observation. So we know that the function g satisfies the homogeneous equation whenever x is not equal to xi. So except x equal to xi, g satisfies homogeneous equation. So what does it mean? So first step is consider x smaller than xi. Then this guy must be some linear combination of the solutions, of the fundamental solutions of the homogeneous equation. So there may be some constant times first fundamental solution, another constant times another fundamental solution. But now these constants, they cannot depend on x, but they can depend on xi. So in general, axi times y1x plus bxi y2x, where y1 and y2 are fundamental solutions of your homogeneous equation. So these are solutions of L y equal to 0. Okay. Okay, second step. Similar, but now we will consider x bigger than xi. X bigger than xi. Xi equals to another constant C of xi. And now what is the trick? Of course, you could take the same fundamental solutions, but it's always, sometimes useful to take a different set. So you can take a linear combination of y1 and y2 and so on. So in general, y1 will be different from y small one. Xi y2 of x. Where again, these are two fundamental linear independent solutions of the homogeneous equation. So that's the second step. Third step is you need this to be equal to 0, so which gives you that xi y1 at a plus bxi y2 at a is equal to 0. And what does it mean? I can solve for either a or b in terms of the rest. So eliminate a or b terms of the rest. And then you have another boundary condition, g b xi equals to 0, which is c xi y1 at b plus d xi y2 at b. And it must be 0, so eliminate either c or d. So what you are left now at this stage is just two constants, two out of these four constants. So you need, yeah?
Use step 2 and 3, what is the difference between these y small and y
capital? Oh, y1. Of course, it could be the same y1 as here and the same y2 as here.
Should be the fundamental solution for the same equation?
Yes. They are the fundamental solutions, but I can say, for example, I can either choose fundamental solution to be exponential a to kx and e to minus kx. Or I can say take a fundamental solution sine kx and cosine kx.
Yeah,
Yeah, but still, I mean, you could choose C and D in a proper way to get to the same form.
Yeah, but you don't want that, actually. Yeah, so of course, I can claim, well, it's the same Y and same Y here, but it's not what you really want to do. You really want to choose a different set. So that's you will see it in tutorial how to do that.
Because there should be only two independent solutions. Like, I can't say that these four are
independent. You will see it explicitly how to do it. So now you need to eliminate two more constants. So first of all, g must be continuous, I claim, at x equal to psi, if the coefficients alpha, beta, and gamma are nice, which we always assume. So from there, you have that a psi y1 at psi plus b psi c at psi y1 at psi plus b psi y2 at psi. So this gives you one more equation. So we have only one constant left. And 6 is, I claim there is a jump condition, which in this special case of our equation says that the derivative of g, if you evaluate it at x equal to psi plus and x equal to psi minus, this is 1 over alpha of psi. Okay, so if this is true, and it gives you the final constant, and you can write down the solution. So solution is y of x equals to, so we know that this integral from g x psi b psi. So I'm integrating over psi, so, and I have all these things here. Thank you. F on psi d psi. So this becomes y1 of x integral from x to b. Okay. And I cannot achieve this one. So it's a problem. So I continue here. That was a mistake. So remember that the first solution, this A's and B's, was valid for x smaller than psi. So psi now goes from x to b. So this equals to y1 of x to b, a psi, f psi, b psi, plus y2 of x to b of psi, f psi, b psi, plus y1 of x, now it's from a to x, so this is valid for that other interval, c psi, f psi, b psi, and y2x. So this is the solution of your problem. So it's really a recipe how to do that, and you will try it today, don't worry. So Evil atom. So
it's not a proof of the recipe, but yeah. Question?
One thing. The B and the D and all this is something related with the Wronskian and the other solution, right?
Yeah. You can. Yeah. Wronskians, that's certainly helpful. Yeah. So, first remark, I claim that G is continuous. So, if it were not continuous, if it is continuous, then it would have a finite jump at least. Then it means that G prime must be proportional to delta function. So if G is not continuous, if it's discontinuous, at least it has finite jump or something worse. So G prime must be something like delta function, and G double prime then must be the derivative of delta function. But if you look at the equation you started from, so we are solving L G equals to delta function, there is no delta prime there. So this cannot happen. You don't have such a singularity there in that equation. So this is not true, and G must be continuous. So next, we can elaborate a little bit more. So we constructed G as this thing. So now we can integrate this from minus xi minus plus xi minus to xi plus and dx. So here we will just pick one. So one equals to the integral from psi minus psi plus. And now we can plug there the explicit form of the operator. So it's alpha times g double prime plus beta g prime plus gamma g dx. Okay. So now if the coefficients alpha, beta, and gamma are nice, which mean continuous and whatever you want, then of course you would like, so this is very, very tiny interval. So if the thing which is there is continuous, then it's just the integral is zero. But of course, we prove that G is continuous. So gamma is continuous. So this is a continuous function. So integral over a very tiny interval gives you zero. So this does not contribute. Now we know that G prime has to have only a finite jump, so that G double prime has delta function. So this has only a finite jump times something continuous. Again, if you integrate it over a very tiny interval, it gives you zero. So this equals two. So now this is continuous. I can take it out outside of the integral. Alpha psi integral psi minus psi plus g double prime dx. And of course, this is equal to alpha of psi g prime x equals to xi plus x equals to xi minus, which is the prescription for the jump I gave you. Okay, so this is continuous, it's fine. So I claim in order g double prime behaves as a delta function, I claim g prime must have only a finite jump. So it cannot behave like delta function. It wouldn't be true. So G prime can have only finite jump. So this guy is only finite jump. But beta is continuous. So I can take it outside. So evaluate it at beta at xi. But then I'm integrating this guy here and that guy here over this thing here. it's just 0. Yeah, does it answer the question? A little bit? Think about it?
Yeah, you said that D' if you have a jump.
Yeah, so this has a finite jump, but you're integrating a very tiny interval. So anything which has finite jump at an infinitely small interval is or
G prime as G two primes and show that we obtain the difference between G and G in two close points. As we choose the two primes, we obtain a difference of G prime.
Okay.
And so to G prime we obtain difference of two G.
So only if you integrate delta function over its region of x equals 0, it can give you 1. If you integrate any other function, which has only finite jump or finite maximum or whatever, then you always get 0 in integration. So this is such that the infinity is so huge that it gives you 1. But if you integrate anything else, which is still a function, then you get 0. So that's why this guy gives you 0. Probably, yeah. Okay, so everything we have done is just for homogeneous condition. But you can easily construct non-homogeneous just by linearity. So, non-homogeneous boundary condition. Just by the linearity of the operator L. So note. So what we have done is we have constructed, let's say, special solution. Constructed a solution, a special solution. Special solution of your inhomogeneous equation. So L y of s, special solution, equals to f with homogeneous boundary conditions. A y b equals to 0. That's what we have done. So now you can take a solution of the homogeneous equation. So take a solution of homogeneous equation with arbitrary boundary conditions. So now I can take L of the homogeneous is equal to something, equal to something else. Well, of course, this can be extended if you have some Neumann conditions as well, but I'm just talking about this diff clef at this point. So then the statement is, if you take y, which is yh plus the special solution, this is a solution of ly equals to f and yi equals to I, yb equals to b. And this is by linearity of L. Questions? So So now let me use this Dirac language again, and just to show you how effective it is. And basically, we shall do in two blackboards what we have done in the first and second lecture, what Dan has done today. And so you'll see it's really, really effective and a little bit more abstract, but it takes some thinking about it, but it is effective language. So let me do something new. It's eigenfunction expansion of Green's functions. But let me be abstract. So let the operator L be self-adjoint, is a self-adjoint of Hermitian, doesn't make difference for us, operator, so self-adjoint operator, such that this is not really a condition, but such that its eigenstates states, let me denote them by n, form orthonormal and complete basis. So what I mean by that, so I have an eigenstate m with the corresponding value lambda n. The fact that they are orthonormal means and m equals to delta n m. And the fact that they are complete means that I can write something like this, whatever this means. Whether it's integral, it's continuous, or whether it's discrete, and it's just a sum. Okay. So these are our assumptions. And now let's see two conclusions at least. So then, first conclusion, any state psi can be expressed as psi equals to sum of n. I'm just putting there 1. Okay, so this is our first and second lecture. It's the Fourier. And something more general. It's not only Fourier. It's arbitrary functions for first and second lecture. So why is it so? So more familiar. So this, I could finish here, but more familiar is the X representation. So then I just write phi of X equals to X on psi. So now it's sum over N, Xn, and psi. So now this guy here does not depend on x. So let's call it a coefficient cn. This guy is called the wave function of n state at position x, psi n x. So we have a sum over n cn phi m x. So it looks more like the Fourier. So let me elaborate a little bit more even than this. So let me take now that x is just periodic with period 2L. And let me specify what I mean by my operator L. So I will just take the operator P. So specifically, okay, take L equals to the operator P of the momentum, then we know that the states N are just the states P. We know that XP is e to I p times x, which is psi px. Let now, so you can do both cases, but let x is periodic with period 2L equals to 2L. Then you know that the momentum must be discrete. P is discrete. So basically, what you mean is e to I k times x must be equal to e to I k times x plus 2L, which means that k times 2L equals to 2 pi times n, where n is the whole number. And then, which means that k is pi n over L. So p is discrete and takes the values p equals to pi n over L. And then it's 1, 0, whatever you want. So then we have this formula here. So psi x equals to sum over n cn e to I n pi x over L. Almost Fourier. So now what is Cn? So by our definition, it was just n acting on psi. So it's n acting on psi. So in our case, n is equal to p, so it's p acting on psi. I can write it in x representation. That's sum over x. Px. X psi. Dx x psi, which is integral over dx. It's just the exponential, and this is psi of x. Psi of x e to minus I p of x, but p is discrete, so it's pi n over L. So it's minus I n pi x over L. So this is the prescription for the coefficients of the Fourier expansion. So now we recovered really the Fourier series. Another thing which comes absolutely for free is just the Percival theorem. So psi square is psi psi. So you can either write it in P representation, which is psi P P psi. But psi P or NP is just CN, CP, or whatever. So it's CN square. So sum over N CN square, by definition. On the other hand, I can write it in X representation. X psi x, x psi. So it's integral over the x, psi x square. So this is Parseval. There should be some constant somewhere, but let's not be bothered by that. So this was for the discrete case. And so we recovered the Fourier series in the simplest case. But you can do x continuous, and then you would get the Fourier transform. So if then p is continuous, and so this this sum, which sum? The sum over p would be now continuous to be an integral. And so this would be the Fourier transform of psi. OK. So that was just a repetition of first, second, and Dan's lecture. So now something new is this language. And it comes also for free. So second, consider now. So we still have that L is self-adjoint, that its eigenvectors form a complete orthonormal basis. To consider the problem, L acting on some state Y equals to some state F. And let's try to solve for F, for Y. Solve for Y. So in order to do that, I need an inversion of L. If I have an inversion of L, L to minus 1, I can apply it here. I can apply it here. I will have Y equals to L minus 1. So I need an inversion of L. So inversion is defined. Let's call it G. So we call it G. So we need L G equals to 1. So let's find such G that L G equals to 1. Claim. G equals to sum over M. N over lambda n. This thing is called Green's operator. So I claim that this G satisfies L times G equals to 1. So let's check that. So L times G equals to, sum over N. Now I'm acting with L, N, lambda N. So this just gives me lambda N times N. So this is sum over N, N. N, which is 1 as we wanted. So indeed, it is what I want. And last few lines. So now let me write this in X representation. Again, X representation is nice. So X, L, on Y. OK, so that was not good. So this is really the eigenvector of the operator X. This is my unknown state phi, Y, which I should probably denote phi, but OK. So this is the operator L in X representation on X y, which is L operator acting on y of x, which on the other hand is xf, so it's f of x. So I'm back to the equation I want. So it's basically, so it's our boundary value problem, or it's the Sturm-Liouville theory if you take that LFX is self-adjoint operator, differential operator. So this is indeed a differential operator now acting on the wave function. So it's self-adjoint. Okay, so now let me define a function of two variables, gx and xi, to be just my operator, which I constructed here, and expanded in the basis x and xi. So then, from that prescription there, this is just equal to sum over n phi n of x, phi n star of xi, divided by lambda n. This is called eigenfunction expansion. Eigenfunction expansion of Green's function. Function g. So I claim this g, this matrix element here is just the Green's function I want. Just let me prove that, and that's the last line. So x lg on xi is operator L in x representation, x g on xi, which is lx g x on xi. But I know that this guy is 1. So this equals to x and xi. X 1 and xi. X and xi, which is delta x minus xi. So indeed, the operator g, well, the matrix element g x xi, this one, satisfies the Green function equation. Operator acting on g equals to delta function. So indeed, this guy is our familiar function g. So this really shows the power of this notation. So everything comes for free in this notation. But of course, what it exactly means, when this operator is exactly the differential operator I want, it's a question whether I can always represent any operator in Hilbert space by a differential operator. It's a question, and so on. But this is like really abstract way to think about these things. And of course, you can use the Green functions also for initial value problem, but we don't have time for that. So tomorrow I will start three applications.